Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to Something to Wrestle With. Bruce Pritchard.
Bruce Pritchard.
Well, you know.
That's not a rib.
She pooted. What a rib.
No, you have a big one.
There's no box of gimmicks.
Rumor and innuendo.
I don't deal in rumor and innuendo.
And
was he there? I was there. I don't give a shit. I ain't scared of shit.
I ain't scared of shit.
Fuck him.
Fuck you, Bruce.
I love you.
Give me double cheeseburger. Double cheese. Double mayo.
Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard. Bruce, what's going on, man? How are you?
Well, Conrad, it is New York City, and I am absolutely excellent because it's WrestleMania.
You're in WrestleMania hell is where you are. You're knee-deep in it. We're in the heart of New York City, and we're going to be talking about the one and only Michael P.S. Hayes today. But first, we need to talk about last week because we got a lot of feedback from last week's show. A lot of people not happy with me saying WrestleMania 17 is overrated.
Well, that's because you were wrong. I was right. And all of our audience was right, too, because they felt that, well, it was the greatest WrestleMania of all time.
Is it going to be better than this Sunday's WrestleMania?
That's to be seen.
Okay. Well, we'll find out. But how about this? The day after this Sunday's WrestleMania, you and I are going to be putting the band back together one last time here in New York City. And the one and only Jim Ross will be joining us. And for obvious reasons, that will never happen again. Bruce Pritchard and Jim Ross on stage. I'm looking forward to this. Tell everybody where they can get tickets and what you expect to happen Monday night after all.
It's the easiest place in the world to get tickets. All you got to do is head on over to BrucePritchard.com. I don't know what instrument Jim's going to play, but I am looking forward to seeing my good old buddy J.R. Sassafras at Murmur there, right down the street, right there in Brooklyn, right after Raw's going to be there. Oh, Brucey's going to be there, JR, and we're going to have us a sassafras time.
You said instrument?
You said to put the band back together, and I'm not sure what instrument that Jim would be playing in that band, because everybody's got to play something.
Well, you play the skin flute these
days. I don't.
Now that you're back with Vince, that's just required.
I get it.
But what is required is that you go ahead and check us out on Patreon. Bruce is going to have some bonus content for you. If you haven't already checked it out, please do. It's patreon.com/Pritchard Show. And let's get into it, man. Without further ado, the one and only Michael P.S. Hayes, born March 29th, 1959 in Philadelphia, PA. That's actually the reason we originally wanted to cover him a couple of weeks ago on the 29th. He moved to Pensacola when he was like 8 years old and starts wrestling in 1979 using his real name as a referee. And back in the day, when he was working that Florida, Alabama, Tennessee territory, he was riding up and down the roads with Hollywood John Tatum. It's a name we haven't talked about much on the show here. You got any John Tatum stories you can share with us?
Well, John Tatum and Missy Hyatt were an item for a time. And John is actually the first one that brought Missy Hyatt into the wrestling business, per se. And John brought Missy to the Mid-South area. They were a tandem, good-looking team, two young people. And that's also where Missy and Eddie Gilbert first met. And then they became a tandem and eventually got married.
Same pattern here.
Yeah, but that was John Tatum. And I think that, Johnny was an interesting cat and that wasn't the best worker in the world. And the guy we're going to be talking about today, Michael Hayes, wasn't the greatest worker in the world.
Well, I'm glad you said that.
But he was a damn good man on the mic.
Yeah, and really, in wrestling, sometimes a big personality compensates for maybe what you lack in the ring and vice versa. So you talked about him not being maybe the best worker in the world. Of course, we're talking about Michael Hayes. He's trained by Afa, the Wild Samoans. I didn't know that, so I started doing research for this show. Afa is, he's got quite the legacy as a trainer. Tell everybody some of the other folks he would have trained over the years.
Well, Afa actually helped start Batista and Billy Kidman. The list kind of goes on and on because during that era, there weren't a lot of schools for guys to go and learn the trade. There weren't a lot of places if you wanted to become a professional wrestler to go and learn. And Afa provided that opportunity for people. Plus, he was a pretty good trainer, he and his brother. So,
what do you think wrestling school cost back then?
It would depend on the guy running it. Some guys were just looking for that quick $300 payday. So, hey, you know, come on in and pay $300. But I believe at the time, Michael was paying $10 a week.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, hey, if payments have you down, you should go ahead and check out our friends over at Lightstream. Isn't that right, Macho?
Ooh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Because you know what feels great? Paying off those high-interest credit cards, getting a lower rate, and saving money. Yeah. And you can get a fixed rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. And you get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fee. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, Lightstream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions. So you can have complete peace of mind. Freak out, freak out. You want to save even more? Well, my listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/wrestle. That's lightstream.com. Put that slash in there and then put wrestle, Yeah, subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto discount, auto pay discount, that is. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/wrestle for more information. Oh, yeah.
Some more information I found during my research here is that P.S. helped get in the business with Bill Moody. I didn't know that they were running mates way back in the day. That's sort of weird to think about.
Bill Moody from Mobile, Alabama.
Tell everybody who Bill Moody, or what would Bill Moody sound like, maybe?
Oh, yes, Michael Hayes, rest in peace.
Actually, the Freebirds were kind of known for peeing on people. Maybe it would be rest in piss.
Good point.
You think, maybe?
Good point, yeah. Like, that could happen. Probably did.
What did Michael ever share with you, or Paul Bearer share with you about the early days with them together? Sounds like a lot of weed going on.
I don't think that they were either one of them making enough money to be partaking in a lot of weed. However, in anticipation of this show, I did talk to Michael a little bit, and this will get you, Conrad, see, because back in the day, he was talking about $10 a week,
sure,
for lessons. And it was like $10 for a lid, a pot.
What is a lid of pot?
See, I knew that you young whippersnappers would not know what a lid is.
I don't know what a lid is. That's like a store that sells hats in the mall.
Well, no, a lid was, you know, like a bag of pot, you know, about an ounce of pot and everything. So that was a lid. So you would go down to your local drug dealer and say, "Hey, buddy, got a lid on you?" "Yeah, I do. How much?" And Michael was going for them $10 lids.
What, you could get a $10 ounce of weed?
Back in the day.
A lot of dirt in that bag. A lot of dirt.
It was dirty weed, didn't they add? Yeah, it wasn't the good stuff.
Like mostly that. Shake, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Nah, well, a lot of stems, a lot of seeds.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
It counts, dude.
Hey, it just means you got to smoke more of it.
Hey, so 1979, when he's wrestling for Mid-South Wrestling, at the suggestion of Bill Watts, he forms a tag team with Terry Bam Bam Gordy. And they win those Mid-South Tag Team titles three times. And there they become the Fabulous Freebirds. And, of course, easy for me to say, the Fabulous Freebirds. He becomes Michael P.S. Hayes. There's been lots of debate over the years. Clear it up. Tell everybody what Michael says the P.S. stands for.
Well, fuck.
Michael, like you think, is pretty sick, purely sexy. Dude.
Over the years, though, you guys have probably come up with other things to stand for those initials.
Oh, God, yeah. We did. Bill Watts did the Prissy Sissy and a few other things that you can't say on TV. But, no, Michael, man, he didn't do the PS shit until he came back in the mid-'80s in the Mid-South, and that's when he adopted the PS. I'm updating my gimmick, dude. I'm going to be PS now. Fuck. I'm forced fuck me as fuck you.
Oh, that's my favorite Brian Gerwitz version of Michael Hayes. So he meets Terry Gordy as a teenager in Mississippi, and, you know, instantly these guys hit it off, become big running mates. And, you know, when they first sort of become buds, they're both teenagers. And I don't think we've talked about Terry Gordy a lot here on the show. I know he's really, really special to Michael. Tell us about, you know, Michael's relationship with Gordy and, more importantly, what Gordy's sort of reputation was amongst his peers in the business.
Well, when they first broke into the business, both very young, they were both teenagers, I believe. Terry younger than Michael. However, Terry was the workhorse, and even at that young age, Terry was this big, just romping, stomping, brawler type of individual that could go out, work with anybody, and the fact that he was a big guy made him, hey, he'll be great for the main event. So you put Terry Gordy into that situation, then you've got a mouthpiece like Michael Hayes. Michael can go cut the promo, go get the heat, send Bam Bam in to do all the work. People love working with Bam Bam. I've never heard any complaints about anybody not wanting to work with Terry Gordy. Michael? Maybe. But Gordy? Never. You know, Terry was a workhorse. But that relationship between Michael and Terry, they were brothers. They loved each other. They rode up and down the roads together. They did everything together, and they were family. So it wasn't a tag team partner. It wasn't a business relationship. It was a brotherhood, and they loved one another as deeply as you can, man to man.
I think, Michael, I said a fellow named Frankie Kane put them together.
Mephisto.
Well, there you go. Okay, because I was going to say I've never even heard that name, but that was his real name.
Yeah.
And we've established on the show that I can't say his gimmick name.
You can't say Great Mephisto?
No, I always want to say.
Come on, let's do it.
I always want to say Memphisito, which is not it. And I did that the first time, and you, like, tried to slap me. This was years ago. So let's talk about...
Memphisito?
Yeah, for me, he'll always be the great Memphisito. You're welcome.
Oh, shit. Well, we'll stick with Frankie Kane.
Yeah, we'll go with Frankie Kane for now. I want to talk about, you know, one of the things that Michael is really credited for, and a lot of people sort of take claim for this, but he says that it was his idea to first sort of bridge the gap between rock and roll and pro wrestling. And at the time, maybe wrestling wasn't ready for it. And eventually, he talks Terry Gordy into it, and then they talk Jerry Jarrett into it, and he goes for it. And they start doing the entrance to the Freebird, the Lynyrd Skynyrd song, Freebird, on Memphis TV, and it sort of grew from there. Now, everybody has a different version of how music got introduced into wrestling. Have you heard Michael Hayes' version? What do you think of that?
I've heard Michael Hayes' version, but again, you go back to the 50s. Of course, George had entrance music, and to my knowledge, was the first wrestler to ever have entrance music. In the early 70s, Bad, Bad Leroy Brown came out to Bad, Bad Leroy Brown.
Right.
So he had entrance music. Look, every era, there's going to have your guy that claims to do it. Michael was the first tag team with three guys in it that came out to Freebird. Okay. So they were the first ones to be the Freebirds that came out to Freebird.
One of the stories that Michael always points to as a reason to sort of explain his affection for Terry Gordy is there was a territory where they were going to fire Michael Hayes. And Terry Gordy says,
that just surprise. Covers a lot of fucking territory of territories.
Well, Terry Gordy said, if you don't want Michael, you don't want me. And Terry Gordy quit. And Terry Gordy was regarded as being, you know, the workhorse of that duo. So they left the building together, and they were fast friends ever since.
Yeah, they were. And like I said, it was a family situation. I dare say the closest second to that would probably be Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express back in the day. They were a threesome and they were a team, and where one went, all three went.
Well, when they went to World Class, they set the world on fire. They did huge business out there with Fritz and the gang. And a lot of their success, I think, as a team, comes from their rivalry with the Von Erichs. Of course, they were a bunch of Texas boys, and the Freebirds came in with all their Georgia stuff. And that really is what Michael Hayes would say is the reason they used the Confederate flag, because that portion of, or that is actually, that still appears on the Georgia state flag now, I believe. And they wanted to make it like a state rivalry, and it was Georgia versus Texas, and those guys did monster business, including a pretty famous night in a cage match with Ric Flair and Kerry Von Erich, where Michael Hayes was the referee. Talk a little bit about, I know you weren't there, but you were at least keeping up with the business, and that was in your home state. What did that rivalry mean? What did that night mean? And what do you make of the whole Georgia-Texas thing as an explanation behind the rebel flag?
Well, it even went a little deeper than that, because WTBS in Atlanta was the first superstation, and they were on cable, so they were national before there was national wrestling.
Right.
The Freebirds had exposure on WTBS from Atlanta, Georgia. So regardless of, you know, none of them are from Atlanta. They're all from Pensacola, or Michael's actually from Philadelphia. But everybody saw him on Georgia Championship Wrestling, so they had adopted and adapted this Georgia persona and took that state as their home state, because that's how everybody saw him. There you go. And coming into Texas, for us, and also it was at a time, cable was still new. It was that new thing. Not everybody had it. And if you did have it, you were rich, and you got that cable. So them coming in, it was things that were perceived on cable were better, bigger. Oh, my God, did you see what happened in Atlanta? So when the Freebirds came in, they were already stars.
Right, they were established.
Yes, they were already stars. And to come in, and I believe they first came in as baby faces, as friends of the Von Erichs, to help the Von Erichs avenge. And then on that fateful, I believe it was a Christmas night, with Kerry Von Erich there, and Michael's the guest referee, and Michael, Terry Gordy's got the cage door. He's going to make sure that Ric Flair doesn't get out, and at the right time, right place, Kerry Von Erich gets that cage door slammed in his head, because Kerry wouldn't let Michael help him beat Ric Flair. Because Ric Flair and Michael had gotten into it, and Michael decked Kerry, decked Flair, told Kerry to pin him, and he'd count it. Kerry didn't want it that way, because he was good milk drinking, damn Texan. No nothing. And at the right time, you had Terry Gordy slam that fucking door on Kerry's head, bust his ass wide open, and Ric Flair kept his title, and then Freebirds kicked the living shit out of them Von Erich boys.
One of the biggest moments in wrestling, certainly of the year, but in the history of world class, right?
I think for world class, that was right up there with when
Kerry beat Flair.
Kerry actually beat Flair, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's got to be 1A or 1B. Well, let's talk about that. While they're out there, they film a music video in 1983 that really was pretty ahead of its time. And I know that we sort of mocked, oh, well, maybe they weren't the first to use music. But a music video like this, very well done, too, I might say.
Yeah.
Bad Street USA.
Bad Street Atlanta, GA. Doot, doot. Baddest street in the whole USA. Doot, doot. Bad Street. Nasty and hot. The further down that block you went, the badder it got. To do do do. See, and even the music is do 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 do. That's the way I hear it.
What was the, it was cool. It is cool. What was your perception when you're seeing that in Houston? Is Bosch sort of shitting on that and mocking it, or are you having to tell him as the older gentleman, hey, man, this is pretty cool.
It was
kids
pretty
are digging
cool.
This.
It was big. It was, and
but sometimes older folks don't get it, right?
No, they don't, and they don't like that damn rock and roll music. But I right. don't care who you are. The song's great.
It's tremendous.
Bad Street is awesome.
Absolutely.
And the fact that it was about them, and they did it, and Michael's terrible, but he was great. You know what I mean? Michael's not that classic rock and roll singer. But however, he's David Lee Roth.
He sings it with confidence, yeah. So it makes it cool.
But he's David Lee Roth is not a great fucking singer, but he's David Lee Roth.
Right.
Michael was Michael Hayes.
Right.
So you believed it. He believed it, and he sang it with that passion that, by God, you felt every bit of it. And that was the beauty of Bad Street USA.
Of course, we should mention the other member of the Freebirds we haven't talked about a lot about is your boy, probably known to be the guy who got beat up a bunch in the group, Buddy Roberts. And Buddy Roberts was a bit of a journeyman wrestler before this, right?
Buddy was. Buddy had had success out in California and in Florida, different places as a tag team, is the Fabulous Blondes. He and Jerry Brown were a tag team. Great tag team. They got a lot of heat, but Buddy had just come off of a stint working as Johnny Valentine's younger brother, Dale Valentine. It failed miserably. Johnny had brought Buddy in and wanted Buddy to manage a restaurant in San Antonio, help him run a wrestling school, all this grandiose ideas that just went right down the shitter. So Buddy was looking for something, and Bill Watts is actually the one, I believe, that put Buddy with Michael and Bam Bam. And Michael was like, he ain't no free bird. Well, he ain't going to wear our colors. And then they got Buddy to travel with them. They got to know Buddy, and Buddy quickly became a free bird brother.
It is funny that he didn't want anything to do with it at first, and then eventually came around, and they became the best of friends. I guess I should mention that Michael's attitude in wrestling was always, you leave while you're on top, so you've always got somewhere to come back to. And they left, and they went to the World Wrestling Federation. This happened in 1984. I know it's before you were there, but I'm sure you've heard the stories. What the hell happened?
They were Freebirds. You know, I heard the story from the WWF version. I've heard Michael's version, but Michael, they came in, and Vince had these huge ideas to do music with the Freebirds. He was using David Wolfe, who was Cyndi Lauper's husband and manager. The idea behind it was that David would then propel the Freebirds. This would be this wrestling tag team that also sang.
Rock and wrestling, baby.
Rock and wrestling, man. It's just continue it to the next level. Michael and them came up. I think that they were there maybe a month, maybe two. I don't even think they were there that long. But this is where, again, going back to your friend Dave Meltzer, where shit gets weird.
Well, I haven't even mentioned him today.
I'm mentioning him.
Okay.
Because this is how just shit gets started and gets blown out of proportion. There was a show that Michael missed for whatever reason. And they had Pat Patterson, who was the agent of the show, work, I think, with Terry or Buddy, whoever, and introduced him as the Fabulous Freebirds, you know, Terry Gordy and Pat Patterson. So Meltzer reports in his Observer, they are making a new Freebird tag team. The new Freebirds will consist of Pat Patterson being a Freebird now. It was one night. Michael didn't show up. Pat substituted for him. And again, this was before the internet, but people got the dirt sheets and everything. And I even remember Bill Watts going, oh my God, they're killing the Freebirds. They're putting Patterson with them.
What would that have sounded? If Pat Patterson sang Bad Street instead of Michael Hayes, what would that sound like?
Bad Street, Atlanta, GTA. I don't. Trying to make it classical somehow. My way. But it was, and all of that speculation, that, but it was stated as fact.
Right.
That Pat Patterson's going to be a Freebird. Because one night, one town, somewhere in America, Pat subbed for a missing Freebird. And that's the silly shit that I fucking hate about him. But
Michael Hayes said that he had fallen in love in Texas, and he wasn't really, you know, his heart wasn't in the New York run because he wanted to be back with her. And allegedly, Terry woke up in a bad mood, and he had been sleeping on the grass, fell asleep outside. And so he showed up.
We've all been there.
We have. We've all been there. Shout out to Big Booty Judy. And so he shows up one day, quote-unquote, highly out of it. and bumps into Andre, who I guess is acting as agent for the night. And Hayes recalled Andre pointing out that they were drunk, and Hayes said, "No, he's not," and then Hayes fell over. So Andre's upset because allegedly he was the one who sort of put in a good word for him, felt like they were blowing their chance, and Hayes has gone on record as saying, "I did the wrong thing for a friend." And he also says he never did fire the Freebirds.
Well, that's the story. That's the New York version of it, and I believe that the version of it happened in Chicago where Andre was playing cribbage, and the Freebirds walked in, messed up, and Andre, "Get out! You're fired!" Because he was the agent that night at the show. That's their story, sticking to it.
There's another version where, you know, they finish all their bookings, and then they have a talk with Vince McMahon, and Vince shares that he doesn't think he can trust Michael Hayes. So he's fired, and maybe he got fired directly from Vince.
He probably did get fired directly from Vince after the fact, but even Michael will tell you, yeah, they missed a show. And whether it was Andre telling him to get out or Michael going, "Well, fuck."
Is it fair to say alcohol was involved in that incident?
Probably.
Okay.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Sure. Allegedly.
I mean, what the fuck? Who doesn't have a fifth of Jack and a couple shots of Jaeger? By that, I mean half a bottle. And you got to chase that down with some ice beer.
Ice beer is the gimmick.
Dude, dude, dude.
Hey, so $250,000 record deal. Does that sound right? Because that's the number Hayes has floated out there. You just said that they were going to try to do
a... Yeah, they were trying to do a record deal. I have no idea what it was for, but it was definitely wanting to be able to take them to that next level with Dave Wolf as their manager and produce albums.
From there, of course, the Freebirds go to the AWA. They feud with the Road Warriors for the titles. In 86, they go to the UWF. In fact, Terry Gordy was the first UWF world champion. They get in a little bit of a feud with Skandar Akbar's Devastation Incorporated. And then the Freebirds break up, and Hayes becomes a full-fledged babyface and remains in the WWF, which is later sold, or I'm sorry, UWF, which is later sold to Jim Crockett in April of 87.
Yeah, and that was the first time that I got to work with the Birds a lot.
In the UWF? Full-time
at UWF, because I was working, Bill Watts owned part of Houston, and that was during a time I was doing double duty TV in Dallas and also TV in Tulsa as well, and being around the Birds a lot. And it was also during this time that we had taken over, when I say we, the Houston office had taken over the merchandising for UWF.
Right.
We were doing lots of t-shirts on different people that had never been done before. Pictures, posters, just different things where in the past they had done some t-shirts. But other than that, they didn't do a lot of merchandise. So we had taken it over, and we were doing some different things. And the UWF folks had ordered all these T-shirts. There were Bad Street USA, Dr. Death. There was Ted DiBiase one, the Fantastics, and something else. So we inherited all of that merchandise. The first show that we did with the Bad Street USA T-shirts was a reunion arena show in Dallas. And I brought all of the t-shirts that I had, which was exactly 240 t-shirts.
You remember the number?
I distinctly remember the number because that was all that they had ordered. It was whatever, 20 dozen. It was 240. That's right, yeah. And we're thinking, man, Dallas, Freebirds, they're going to do well. And they did do well. I mean, we sold a lot of, we probably sold more Bad Street shirts than we did anything else other than maybe Dr. Death. Well, that night, I made a comment to Michael. I said, "Hey, Michael," I said, the Bad Street shirts came out good. And I said, they're selling real good tonight. He goes, where the fuck did you get them? I said, got them from Scott. And Scott Munns was the merchandise guy that Bill had used before that. He worked directly for Bill Watts. Where the fuck did he get them? And I'm like, I don't know. Well, you can't sell my shit. Okay. Wasn't the place and or time to get into it. Well, Michael then, quote,
I had somebody go out and camp, and they sold over 2,000 T-shirts that night. I know for a fact.
And he was really upset, went to Bill, came to us, and because we were the ones running merchandise. And I said, Michael, there weren't even 2,000 T-shirts produced. There were 240 produced. And I've still got a bunch of them. It did sell well in Dallas. I bet you we probably sold maybe 100 of them. That was good back in the day.
No, oh God, I had somebody up there counting, and they're considering a couple thousand sold.
So we had to have a big meeting in Tulsa at the fairgrounds, and Michael and his people came in, and eventually we settled, and it just became, you know what? We're not going to sell it. Here's how many were ordered. We will pay you
for all of them that we ordered.
For all of them that we ordered, we'll fucking give you. Here's all of the profit.
Even the shit we didn't sell.
Even the shit we didn't sell, and never sold another one.
Right.
After that, and just cut it off because it was more trouble than it was worth. But to Michael's defense and his credit, he had Bad Street trademarked. He had protected himself. And in the wrestling business for so long, promoters and people that were doing that, you just did it. You know what I mean? There wasn't – Vince had done the deal where he had great merchandise deals for the guys and paid them a percentage of merch. That hadn't been done before. And that was something that we were starting to do by taking over the merchandise, that talent would now participate in the sales. But it hadn't been done before that. So Michael thought he was being ripped off. He wasn't, but he thought he was. And, you know, he was a little high-strung back in those days.
What do you think about breaking up the Freebird? It's been a successful gang. I guess we should mention this. Is that the first gang? Is that the first faction in wrestling? It predates the Horsemen, predates DX and the NWO.
Probably the longest group together like that. Yeah, definitely the first threesome. It was definitely the first threesome that were in, you know, their gimmick was Fabulous Freebirds Incorporated, which means any two Freebirds could wrestle in any match. So if you've got a tag team match against Bob Armstrong and Mr. Wrestling number two, you never knew what two Freebirds you were going to face. Could be Michael and Terry, could be Michael and Buddy, could be Buddy and Terry. They could do any combination they wanted. And that was a selling point of it. And Michael was the mouthpiece. The other two guys were the workhorses.
So Michael was the first threesome in wrestling. These days, if Hayes was going to be in a threesome, he could probably use a little ageless male Max, couldn't he, Bruce?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And also, you know, kind of when it, you know, if you want healthy sex, you know what I'm talking about. Your body needs what is called nitric oxide. And now you can boost your own nitric oxide production faster than you thought possible with Ageless Male Max.
Hang on. Are you sure Michael Hayes doesn't want to talk about this product? Because it feels like it would be right up his street, which we know is bad for him.
Why? Because it's fucking absurdly a fast formula from the number one brand of male enhancement? Hey, let me tell you something. You'll get clinically tested ingredients that rapidly boost nitric oxide production, and it won't go unnoticed if you do know what I mean. Now, Ageless Male Max already taken Walmart by storm. I can't even find it in my Walmart. But you can get started by having a 30-day supply delivered right to your door. Ain't gonna be no questionnaires, no online tests, and it's fast and discreet shipping. Just text the word RAM.
That's right.
R-A-M, RAM. To 797979. That's RAM to 797979. And you're going to get the rapid boost in nitric oxide production that you and your partner crave. Make her happy. You know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to let you try your first 30-day bottle free. That's right, free. Just pay shipping and handling. When you text the word RAM, 797979. After results too intense, please decrease use. That's RAM 7979
$79. This free offer is contingent on subscription. Cancel anytime. Message and data rates may apply. That's RAM $79.79 for your free 30-day supply.
How great is it that the code is RAM for Angel's
Food? Well, fuck. It can't be It's got to be R-A-M because that's what I I ram them.
I have a feeling even Vince would like that promo code, RAM. All right, let's talk about, you know, I guess we should just skip ahead. We know that the Freebirds are going to wind up in WCW, and by the Freebirds, I mean Michael Hayes and Jimmy Garvin. I know you weren't there, so we'll keep it moving here. But what did you think of that incarnation? It's not the same without Gordy and Buddy, is it?
No, to me, once the team split up and you didn't have the original members, which was Michael Hayes, Buddy Roberts, and Terry Gordy, it just wasn't the same. Now, throughout the years, Jimmy Garvin was always an honorary Freebird, and he always was part of the gang. They always hung out together in real life, so he was a part of the gang. And I'll even go on, you know, going back to the UWF days, back in the day when we would run Dallas, some of the best times ever were after our television tapings. We would go back to Jimmy Papa's house. Jimmy Papa was the drummer and I guess the band manager or something for the Bad Street Band and the Freebirds, and just party. That's the first time that I actually got to meet Big Bill Moody. Percy Pringle was at Jimmy Papa's house in the after party after Dallas TV. So Garvin was always around. Garvin was one of the Freebirds. He was an honorary Freebird. To Michael, it just made sense. Well, who the fuck else would be? Got to be a Freebird. Man, there you go.
There you go, indeed. They won the tag titles twice there in WCW, the United States tag titles twice as well, and he even beat Lex Luger to win the United States title, which really feels like something that I can't even believe I'm saying out loud. I mean, I watched it, but Michael Hayes was the United States champion.
So what the fuck? You don't think I could be the champion of the United States of America?
It's just pretty wild he beat Lex Luger for that belt, just saying. What did you think of Michael as a color commentator? He sort of flirted with that a little bit in WCW, and he helped with some other things, the music and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. But as a commentator, what did you think?
Well, Michael first did color in the UWF with Jim Ross, and they were a perfect pair. They were a perfect pair because they were natural, and Michael's a natural antagonist. If Michael were to walk in here right now, he would immediately pick on one or both of us to take the opposite point of view. Probably both of us and find three different points of
yes.
view in there somehow. He has a natural gift of gab. He is a natural antagonist. And
his phrase is, "You don't get it."
But he just was great at that. And that was, it wasn't something he had to think about.
Right.
Plus, Michael also understood the very simple philosophy of being a color commentator, which is to get talent over, not yourself. And how you get over is by getting talent over and being good at it.
Let's talk a little bit about the way he leaves WCW. It's written in the Observer, Michael Hayes quit after being offered a $75,000 per year deal. Hayes also has a seriously injured back, so the entire Johnny B. Bad Hayes scenario on Worldwide will lead to nothing, and their match scheduled for the February 20th pay-per-view is out the window. That happens in February of 94. You were there at the time. How does Michael's name come up the first time with Vince?
Michael called me. I'm sure he called Jim Ross as well, but I know he was calling me.
And he said, "You still owe me for them goddamn T-shirts."
Hey, boy.
But Michael knew that he had fucked up when he was in the WWF before and
sure.
didn't leave them with a good taste in their mouth. So I would bring Michael's name up, and the answer was every single time, "Nope, not interested." You add to that it was well known that Michael's injury prevented him from working for WCW, and that, well, he's got a back injury. How much can he do? The right time, and it helped that both Jim and I were plugging for Michael Hard, and then the right, you know, it's all timing. Right time, right place. And this was a couple of years, it felt like, or at least every 6 months, that Michael would call and say, just checking in. And every single time I would write his name down and bring it up to Vince. Hey, Michael Hayes is available. But when we needed that color commentator, and I don't even remember what the hell it was Lawler, whoever it was, but we needed a color commentator. I said, Vince, I really believe you and Michael Hayes would have chemistry. God damn it, that look, he's all grimy, and that long hair, the bleach blonde and the beard, ugh, just looks dirty. So well, we can change the look. That's not an issue. And Vince was like, okay, if I can change the look, I'll try it on. But he has to be willing and know that up front that I want to change his look. So I let Michael know. I said, hey, he may ask you to cut your hair, man. And he may doesn't like beards. So if you're coming into this, here's an opportunity. And it's a great opportunity because you get to work with Vince on the A Show. And that's the best spot you can be in. And I wouldn't put you in any situation that you won't excel at. So know that as well. I'm not setting you up to fail here. But there's an issue with your look. I'll shave my ass. I'll do whatever I got to do. And Michael came in. I remember his hair was down to the middle of his back, just bleached blonde, and walking through the hall, full beard and everything. And I was like, oh, God, this is going to be tougher than I thought. Vince met with him. I think we put him in the studio first. They might have done a little back and forth. Vince felt instant chemistry with him. And then I was like, got to do something about your look, pal. How about a haircut? All right. How much? Oh, I'll just take a little off the back. About 14 inches later, and I had a hairstylist upstairs in makeup.
Waiting. You're a fucking asshole.
Why?
Because you did this to your brother, too.
Hang on. No.
You told him up
front. Got him a job?
Don't get sassy.
Got him a job, and then was able to facilitate him starting that day, that moment, within an hour.
You know, this whole bowing up Bruce routine is hilarious because when you said, I had a stylist upstairs, you had a twinkle in your eye. You were so
I was ready.
You loved it. Did you film this?
I don't know.
There's footage of Michael Hayes getting a haircut?
I know there's pictures. I don't think there's footage.
Did he, like, put the hair in a bag and take it home? Like
he might have.
Jim Cornette?
Might have.
Yeah.
But, again, I had a stylist there. I'd warned him ahead. I warned him before he ever left Atlanta. He's going to want to cut your hair, probably. He's going to want to change your look. So we were ready if he said yes. If he said no, he could have gone home, gone back to Atlanta.
Would you have been disappointed had he walked in without a beard and without hair down to his back?
No, I would have been ecstatic because that would have said to Vince, here I am. I've changed my look. What do you think? I'm willing to do whatever you want, Vince. However, there was no hesitation when he said, yeah, I cut my hair.
So I know this is silly, but how was he dressed?
Like Michael.
So he had a fanny pack on?
Oh, I'm sure he did. And I'm sure that he had a fanny pack on. He had a kind of a suit, a Michael suit.
So it was like a loud, crazy color suit?
No, I think it was cream colored.
Okay.
But I remember him being in a suit. He was nicely dressed. He was dressed as Michael, but then he did the whole thing, shaved the beard, kept the mustache, and he was like, got to do something with that name, and came up with different, what do you like? You know, he likes music, he likes things, and Doc Severinsen was the leader of the Tonight Show orchestra band.
So who?
Doc Severinsen.
I didn't know what the fuck you just said. What is a Doc Severinsen? Do you realize how old you are when you say
Do you realize how uneducated you are by not knowing who Doc Severinsen is?
Listen, if we're going to talk Kevin Eubanks, all right?
I'm yeah.
I, that's what I'm saying. That's the age. Listen, Pop, continue your story.
So Doc Severinsen was a leader of the most famous band in the world.
Oh, Jesus.
And then he, well, I like Jimi Hendrix. So you had Doc. He liked Doc.
Hang on.
And he liked Jimi Hendrix.
This name was born from the Tonight Show band leader and Jimi Hendrix?
Yes.
Wow.
Merged together. And now Doc Hendrix is born.
And he liked it.
Yeah.
He starts as Doc in April of 95. And Meltzer would write, Michael Hayes debuted on Superstars as Doc Hendrix with a haircut, shave, and being much better dressed. Lawler is moving to do Raw, and Cornette was only temporary co-host because he hated flying in and out. He works as a commentator, of course, for several years, but I think the most famous moment of all for him as Doc Hendrix is King of the Ring, 1996, right, with Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Yes, or Michael was in his nice little tuxedo, and he was the interviewer talking to Stone Cold about winning King of the Ring, and Austin's infamous, most famous line of all is, well, you know, you, Jake Roberts, you can thump your Bible, say your psalm, but Austin 3:16 says, I just whooped your ass, and it was done.
And he's got a, he played another big role in Stone Cold's success. He wrote in his book, This is Austin, I mean. One day at TV in Fayetteville, North Carolina, I remember Michael Hayes walking up to me and said, hey, kid, come here. You got a second? I said, yeah. He said, I've been trying to think of a good finish for you. You know, that Cobra Clutch deal is okay, but if you do this other finish, it would be better. Wrestler Johnny Ace, who now works with JR and Talent Relations, was doing a version of it in Japan called an Ace Crusher. And Hayes said, it's different from Ace's finish because you put the guy's chin on your shoulder, jump up, and then you land on your ass. And he got some of the local wrestlers together in the ring and said, hey, guys, do you mind helping us with this? And they started practicing the stunner that day. He did it about six times, and Michael Hayes said, pretty cool, huh? And Austin said, yeah, I like it. And there you go. JR named it the Stone Cold Stunner, and we're off to the races. I don't think that gets talked about enough.
It doesn't, and the idea behind it was one of Michael's. Well, he should have been able to hit some. He's a rattlesnake. He should be able to hit some just out of the blue. It's like a snake bite. And hence the Stone Cold Stummer, the Stone Cold Stunner was born.
What was Michael doing besides just commentary with Vince at the time? Because that's really good insight here in the late 90s.
Doing commentary. He was doing commentary. Then he did the live event centers. And he had his hands in a lot of different things.
Did he produce, though?
No, he wasn't producing wrestling matches by any stretch of the imagination. No one had the confidence in him at that point, but he was really, really good. The other thing was Michael was that guy that you would have a production meeting and you would lay everything out, and I dreaded it when I would say, questions, comments, anybody? And if Michael was sitting in the back left-hand corner of the room, I would look to the front right. Like, okay, nobody's got any questions. And, ooh, I got a question. Hey, I got it. Constantly. He still does to this day. The thing about it is that his questions were very logical, very well thought out, and it made you sometimes feel real stupid because you missed it. But Michael would pick up on little nuances that would change things and make them mean a lot more. And that, to me, is the genius of Michael Hayes, being able to take the larger picture and making these fine details mean that much more. And that's what he did. So that eventually got noticed.
Well, it did get noticed. And I mean, we know what his legacy has gone on to be. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little more. But I do want to talk about, all of a sudden in 1999, he pops up wrestling again in Memphis for Power Pro Wrestling. Meltzer would write, the Michael Hayes of 1984 would have been a superstar in the industry today. The Michael Hayes of 1999 is like a parody of a wrestler. It's this middle-aged, beer-bellied second baseman still wearing a tank top on a softball team who probably was a stud in his youth, if you get the picture. It was made worse when they showed a Hayes interview today and the Bad Street video from 84, and it's like seeing the father of a rocker trying to play a rocker. So Meltzer's shitting on him, but why in the world did he try his hand again in wrestling in 99?
I think he just wanted to get in the ring and take some bumps and have some fun. That's really all it boils down to.
Well, he did. He even became the Power Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Champion in March of 99 and dropped it in May to J.R. Smooth, who's going to go on to become Rikishi. And later that month, he started managing the Hardys on TV. And that's probably the first time that a lot of fans who are listening to our show really were introduced to Michael Hayes. How did that pairing come to be?
We had the Hardy Boys, and go back to the camps that we used to have all the time, the Funkin' Dojos, and the Hardy Boys had been enhancement talent for us for so long, you kind of started to take them for granted. But they had been through that. They'd done that for several years. And now you look at new talent. Where are you going to find them? And we're looking at some of these younger guys. And Cornette is the one who said, "God damn, what about the Hardys? We should bring them in." And we did. And we kept them off TV for a while, long enough so people would forget about all the times they'd had their ass whooped on TV. And we brought the Hardys in as a team, but neither one of them could talk. Jeff was terrified, and Matt thought he could talk, but really couldn't. They needed a mouthpiece. So the idea was Michael Hayes. And Michael not only, Michael liked the Hardy Boys, felt that they had a lot of upside. So Michael was going to be that mentor to be able to go out, cut the promos for the Hardy Boys, but also be at ringside to get them through their matches, to be right there to not only tell them what to do, but sometimes show them exactly what to do. And be in the heat of the moment and be able to call it for them. So Michael was there to get the Hardy Boys out of being that enhancement tag team and make them, if they were ever going to be big-time players, this was their chance to get out of that groove.
It's been said over the years, of course, that Michael Hayes was not only a big fan of the Hardy Boys, but Edge and Christian as well. And, of course, that group of guys had some absolutely legendary matches, and you've sort of talked about that in fun tones before, those tables, ladders, and chairs matches. What was the relationship like with those tag teams, and why was Michael so in love with them?
Because I think Michael saw him and Terry in both of those tag teams, being young, having their entire careers ahead of them, and being able to travel the world and learn and be able to experience all of these things. And I think I've told the story about the Hardy Boys sitting in the diner with Michael and Michael having the idea of what was next for the Hardys. "I got an idea. How about we get these dusters, all of us, in it at full length all the way to the ground? We take forks and knives and spoons, and we put them on the jackets. Ain't nobody else going to have that. Ain't nobody else going to have that." That was his great idea for the Hardys, which actually would have been pretty cool because nobody else would have had it.
Motherfucker, if somebody shows up on Raw or SmackDown with utensils on it, I'm blaming you and Hayes. All right, so let's keep it going. Let's talk about Fully Loaded 1999, I believe. July 25th in Buffalo, New York. We've got Farouk and Bradshaw. They're the Acolytes. And they're going to win the tag titles, beating Matt and Jeff and Michael Hayes. It's 2-on-3 here. And the match gets started, and JBL clotheslines the shit out of Michael Hayes. And the finish is a double powerbomb on Michael Hayes. So Michael Hayes actually gets pinned and costs the Hardys their tag titles. What do you remember about this match?
Dude. It was time for Michael. He had done all he could do with the Hardys, and it was actually kind of the original intent. I think that we had served that master, and Michael also being in the production meetings was, you saw what he did for the Hardys. He had good ideas for other people. So Vince started to listen to him more and gave him more opportunities to be a part. Not if he can do that for the Hardys and these guys, what can he do for other talent? And so Michael was brought into that creative process and used to help, you know, before we get to TV.
The August 9th Raw, we would see Gangrel beat Christian with the implant DDT after blowing mist in his eyes. And then the Hardy Boys would come out during the match and jump Christian. Edge makes the save, but Gangrel DDTs him. And then Michael Hayes runs in to pull the Hardy Boys off, but they turn on him. And you could have heard a pin drop when they turned on Hayes. And they each gave Hayes a twist of fate. And that's it. No more Hayes, no more Hardy Boys. Was Michael disappointed he wasn't going to be on TV anymore?
I think Michael felt, well, I should have come back. What the fuck? How about if I went out and brought the Road Warriors in? Or, yeah, something. I think Michael really felt that he should have had a comeback of some sort in there. But he was moving on. He was moving on to do what I think is, I'm not taking anything away from his in-ring career because he had a great one.
Sure.
Phenomenal one. But I think that his forte was behind the scenes.
Well, he goes back to backstage work and doing color commentary again, and he starts doing that on September 23rd, 1999 on SmackDown, and he does some color commentary work on Sunday Night Heat alongside Michael Cole and Kevin Kelly from 2000 to 2001. He used on a lot of international broadcasts, which covered our WrestleMania 17 episode. He got a huge pop in the gimmick Battle Royal. How excited was he to dust off that old robe and strut ass down there in Texas again?
I think it was vindication for Michael. To come out, do it in Texas, Houston, where
it's WrestleMania.
It's WrestleMania. And Freebird's coming out. But the place exploded for him.
Sure they did.
They were happy to see him, and he was happy to be out there. So it was a lot of fun for a Freebird, first time to be in a WrestleMania.
What does he do sort of backstage at that point? You know, 01, 02, 03?
Michael was an agent, but he was also a part of the writing team. So he was part of creative and creating a lot of that stuff.
Tell me what, not now, but what did it look like back in, you know, 02, 03, the writing process, the teams, if you will?
Well, they would get together and they would come up with TV, and then they would pitch Vince. And
I want to get real granular here for a minute. Like, they get together in Stamford. There's a room in the headquarters.
Yeah, and actually I wasn't a part of it at that time. I was still in talent relations. So,
but you knew how it happened.
It was those guys getting together, and they had offices, and they had a writing room, I think, at the studio. So those guys would all get together. Then they would pitch Vince, and they would get together and work with Vince and talk about ideas for TV, put it all on paper, and then go execute.
These days, people probably can do group social media chats or group text messages. Back then, was it all by email? Or if somebody had an idea, just strike them in the middle of the night, they wrote it down and then presented it at the round table the next week?
We had phones.
Okay, but I'm just saying, like...
Yeah. No, a lot of it was on the phone. A lot of it was just writing it down. Yes, we had email, but...
That wasn't the go-to.
I still don't use email.
No, I'm aware.
As effectively as I guess I should. But... And for some of us old-timers, that's a hiccup. I mean, I still write with pencil. And
some of your old notes are fading now.
They are.
Because the lead is disappearing. Yeah.
Yes, they are.
So let's talk about something that you knew we were going to bring up, the plane ride from hell, May 5th, 2002. I wasn't there. I know you're going to say that. But Sean Waltman says, Michael Hayes was getting real bad. And he's got a lot of heat. Nobody likes him. He was drunk, rowdy as fuck, like being a dick, loud and obnoxious. Hayes almost pissed on Linda McMahon. He was all fucked up, trying to whip his dick out. He didn't know it was Linda. He thinks he's at a fucking bathroom. And he starts saying, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. He just keeps saying, wait a minute, over and over. And the story goes that Bradshaw fucking clocked him and knocked him out. So Hayes is out cold, and he's got that fucking long hair and a ponytail and that mullet. You know, you're still rocking the mullet. And I said, somebody get me a pair of scissors. And I remember Lawler over there just giggling, and everybody's like, no, 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 you're not going to do it. I grabbed those scissors like I was pulling a pair of tape brass knucks out of my tights, really over-exaggerating, and the whole plane just erupted. And Hayes would not realize it was gone until he went through customs. Now, this is all Sean Waltman's account of what happened. What do you remember about the plane ride from hell and the shenanigans Michael Hayes allegedly was involved in?
Well, okay, first of all, those are two different plane rides that kind of merged into one, because the alleged urination took place in another plane ride that I was actually a part of. The
plane ride from hell is where Michael got his ponytail cut off. And from what I hear, it's kind of that's how it happened. Michael passed out up in the front of the plane, and they kind of had enough, and his ponytail was gone. And when he discovered, hi, who's the pussy ain't got the balls to face me? And like Jerry Briscoe finally threw his bags up because Michael was challenging everybody on the plane, and Briscoe goes, Michael, you don't fight. We ain't fight. Fuck it. Let's go right now. I don't care. I didn't cut your hair, but shut the fuck up. We can go right now. And then when it was Jerry Briscoe that shut up, that said something, I'm like, well, fuck. I won't fight you, Jerry.
So the peeing on Vince, Linda McMahon, pretty famous story. He even alluded to it in his Hall of Fame speech. It led to a saying that became pretty popular with him and some WWE brass.
That's on you.
Yeah. Well, Michael had to go to the bathroom. He walked up. He was close to the bathroom, and he started to, I guess he thought he was in the bathroom. I saw it from behind. Hunter saw it from the front. But we both saw it, thankfully, before it was too late, and tackled Michael into the actual bathroom. It was one of those doors that kind of went in, and both Hunter and I are kind of looking at ourselves going, God, he's not pissing on us, is he? Because, yeah, Freebird was free.
Well, they were free at the wedding, the famous Hunter Hearst Helmsley Stephanie McMahon wedding. A pretty famous story here. Maybe he was overserved a little bit. Wade Keller would write, Michael Hayes made a spectacle of himself at the wedding of Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. An attendee paraphrased Hayes' drunken wedding reception antics. First, Hayes got on stage and performed Jailhouse Rock with the wedding band, and his performance drew a few uncomfortable chuckles and was considered out of place by many of those in attendance.
Wrong. That was fucking on fire and was one of the highlights of the wedding. The Jailhouse Rock performance was off the chart great.
Where Michaels lost everyone was when he took the stage again later that night and wanted to perform another song. This time the band refused, which led Hayes to berate them. Hayes decided to sing without the band supporting him, and based on one reception attendee's account, Hayes said something along these lines.
This song goes out to Stephanie and Hunter. Fuck. I mean Stephanie and Paul, the billion-dollar princess and the million-dollar talent.
He starts singing a song, encourages everyone to join in, and specifically Kurt Angle speaks up and says that you're making a fool out of yourself, and eventually Linda takes the stage, snatches the mic away from Hayes, and says, thank you, Michael, in the most sarcastic manner. It was described to the torches, low class and low brow, everything Vince McMahon doesn't want to be. Allegedly, Triple H was pissed off by Hayes' antics, as were a number of guests. Nobody wanted to throw the first punch and mess up the wedding, but he had one coming, said one observer. You were there. What did you think of the encore performance by Mr. Hayes?
Highly entertaining. You know, he might have had a little too much to drink, but he, like I said, the first performance, he tore the house down, and I don't think anybody was disappointed by that one. That one was absolutely great. Then when he went on to sing a song that no one knew what he was trying to sing, and there might have been a F word in there, but that was absolutely classic. And when Kurt went up to say, hey, Michael, why don't you come on?
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Shoot on me?
And that's when Linda intervened and just took the microphone and thanked him very much, and Michael went, I think I'm going to go to bed now. Dude, I'm sleepy and tired. I think I need to go to bed. I got an idea.
How much heat was on Michael after that?
I don't think there was any heat. It was one of those fun moments. You had something to talk about.
Go ahead and tell the story that Brian Gerwitz told at one of our New York shows a few years ago where Stephanie's pregnant, and everybody's sort of talking about, you know, all the crazy antics that Michael Hayes has had over the years. And Brian raised the question, what would Michael Hayes have to do in order to get fired? And he went through some of these crazy antics where he almost peed on Linda. He maybe showed out a little bit, had a little too much to drink, overindulged at the wedding. And he sort of, Brian made up a song, maybe a Beyonce song. I think Beyonce's was All the Single Ladies. And Michael Hayes had a different one.
Little Stupid Baby, something like that. Oh, you little stupid baby. Yeah, it was.
The idea being, if I'm going to jog your memory here a little bit. Brian said he would do an impression of Michael Hayes, and he would say, "That baby don't know shit. Stupid fucking baby. Can't walk and talk. Who'd that baby ever beat?
Yeah, that little baby ain't done shit."
And then he broke into
all stupid babies. You're a stupid baby. Yeah, well, we had fun with that.
Talk about Brian and Michael's relationship.
Brian Gewirtz was the lead writer of Raw, extremely talented. Brian listens to our show, so shout out to Brian.
Yeah, well, you just butchered Fuck his him. Story, by the way.
I know I did.
I teed it up as good as I could.
Yeah, but you know what? It's
just come to a show sometime. Well, I guess we're out of shows.
Yeah, so. Well, you know, oh, it well. Happens. But, no, Brian was Raw and Michael was SmackDown, deep. So it was kind of a love-hate relationship, and it was one of those that Michael being from the South, Brian being from New York City, it was a bit of a culture clash as well. And they had a lot of fun together. But there was a ton of mutual respect for one another, but it was fun to listen to the interaction as Brian learned an awful lot about the South and Michael learned an awful lot about the North.
Do you remember about his hair? Brian had a theory about whether Michael's hair was
Michael's hair. If Michael's hair was up in a ponytail, then it was safe. You could go party with Michael. But if the bun was undone, you better run. That meant Beowulf was out. So as soon as Michael took the hair down out of the ponytail and the bun was undone, you better run.
On the December 5th, 2005 episode of Raw, Michael Hayes becomes involved in a verbal confrontation with Edge, where Hayes attacks Edge's lack of main event experience and the details of his love life, and then Hayes is later attacked by Edge. In October of 06, he becomes the head creative writer for SmackDown after Alex Greenfield left the company. You were there at the time. It's a long way from having to get a haircut to get a job to now head of creative for SmackDown, huh?
Yeah, but Michael, you know, again, a lot of that shit's, you know, corporate titles and things like that that don't always mean that much, because Michael he was in charge of that, and he did do that, but he was such an integral part in not just SmackDown, but also Raw and everything that we did creatively. I hate to say this out loud because people will judge it, and I'll have to listen to it from Michael. But Michael really is a savant and a genius in the wrestling business in a lot of ways. I mean, he has a very unique outlook on the business and how it's presented, and has been able to take that outlook and create a lot of interesting things. So I think that especially when it comes to unique and creative finishes, that he I don't think there's anybody better.
What's he do these days?
I don't know. I don't know. I think Michael works with the live events, but he also is a producer at TV too. So he helps young talent. He is able to take something and make it make sense.
Allegedly, there are, you know, top guys who are sort of assigned a guy, like a John Cena allegedly had Arn Anderson as his guy. Does Michael have guys?
He probably does. I don't know who the hell they'd be nowadays. But Michael was one of those that, for example, Pat Patterson always loved to work with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. And Michael was somebody, he loved to work with Stone Cold, and obviously he loved to work with the Hardys and people like that. But Michael was instrumental in a lot of guys getting over and taking them to the next level with just that little tweak on their character to make them from just being a star to a superstar.
One of Michael's last big promos on TV was a segment with MVP back in 2007, December of 07 on SmackDown. MVP had a little talking segment called the VIP Lounge. What do you remember about that? I know Michael had to enjoy one last piece of business.
Yeah, I think Michael would love any time to have camera time and be able to be out in front of the audience and have fun and get creative and be put in that legendary role. And I know that when he went into the Hall of Fame, being able to perform Bad Street at a WWE Hall of Fame was a huge thrill. I think that he was looking for an oxygen tank about 30 seconds into it. That's a whole nother story. But I know that that was something that was really special to him and a thrill for him to actually do all these years later and have people. When we had Michael at our live show in Atlanta, to me, the best part is, you know, it's a kick when we do, and I'll sing Spend My Days, and everybody sings it with me. That's the biggest kick in the world. But when Michael sang Bad Street in Atlanta, brother, everybody came.
Yeah, I had goosebumps. It was awesome.
And that to me is just something that you can't replicate, and that feeling is unlike anything in the world.
What do you think Michael Hayes' legacy in the business will be?
Freebird. I think to the general public it'll be Freebird. And to those of us that know him, for me, my viewpoint is I think that Michael will go down as one of the greatest minds in the business creatively. And when he first started to do that, there were old timers like Roddy Piper, Hulk Hogan, that when they had come back, they'd been away for a while, and they came back, and all of a sudden Michael Hayes is the one that is talking to them about creating. They're going, what the fuck is this guy doing here, man? It's like, you know, he was a free bird down south, and what would he ever do? But once they got past that and listened to him and worked with him, it was like, give me Michael. You know, I want to work with him. And so for me, I think Michael's legacy will be the continuation of the business and being able to put that creative spin and make as much on the show mean something as possible.
There's been a fair amount of negativity online about Michael Hayes over the years, people who didn't really know him and people who, you know, believe what they read one way or another. And as me and you have discovered, sometimes what you read on the inside or on the internet is one-sided or slanted, and it doesn't tell the whole story. You were there for a lot of the ups and downs behind the scenes of Michael Hayes. How would you describe him as a person?
I would describe Michael Hayes as probably one of the sweetest human beings I've ever met. He really doesn't have a malicious bone in his body. And when you hear him and look at him and you actually take the time to get to know him, you realize I want him to be my friend and I want to learn from him.
Yep.
And I don't know anybody that has taken that time to get to know him and not just listen to the rumor and the innuendo and the bullshit out there, that you'll see he is one of the most genuine, brutally honest.
Yeah.
But one of the most genuine people you will ever, ever encounter in your lifetime. And I'm happy. I told a story just last night to somebody about Michael and the first time that my wife met Michael Hayes, and she was terrified of him.
Mine too.
Yeah, and it was like, oh my God, what the hell is this? And then she got to know Michael.
Yep.
And it was, you know, he's got a special place in our heart and our home, and he's one of my, you know, one of those guys in the business that I look at and go, okay, he's my buddy.
He definitely has a facade, though.
You know, yeah.
He puts up the big wall and the big hard shell. But then once you get to know him, it's a totally different guy, and that was my experience, too. Years ago when she and I first went to his house for the first time, she had hung out with him, you know, in social settings for a lot. But actually going to his house and seeing him interact with his dogs and getting the real him at home, it's a different guy.
Yeah, Jerry Briscoe and I, every time we were in Atlanta, would stay at Michael's house. That was always an experience. But Joe Hayes, JoJo was his dog.
Everybody who saw the Hall of Fame knows about JoJo.
Yes.
And JoJo was awesome, man. But, again, he's just regular. He's flesh and blood, and he fucks up, makes mistakes. We all do. But as much as he would like for you to think sometimes that he's mean and nasty and snarling, he's just a teddy bear, one of the sweetest people you'll ever meet.
That is until he takes his ageless male, Max. And then all that changes a little bit.
Look, yeah. The ageless male Max patent's pending formula has got an ingredient to help boost your total testosterone. It promotes greater increases in muscle size, twice the reduction in body fat percentage, and an amazing 64% increase in nitric oxide, which can be handy in the gym, if you know what I mean, and in the bedroom, dude. Try your first 30-day bottle free. Pay shipping and handling. When you text the word RAM, R-A-M, 797979, message and data rates may apply.
Let's do some rapid-fire questions. Let's start with a big one here. We asked for your questions on Twitter, and Michael Hayes has a question. I'll let you read it.
I got a question. How are you really going to have this show without me?
Michael, no guests needed. We don't do guests here.
Have you guys talked about the fact that we're going to be doing his show?
Yes, and he's very upset that we're actually doing it professionally in a studio today in New York City. He wanted to come by. He goes, well, fuck, I just wanted to come by and say deep.
Bacabella wants to know, what was the most ridiculous thing he ever asked Jeff Hardy to jump off of?
Hey, Jeff, can we get a trained shark and you could ride it up onto the beach and then do like a quadruple backward flip?
I don't know, man. He's asked Jeff to jump off of damn near anything. Wasn't nailed down.
Josh Whalen wants to know, can you guys put together a glossary of Hayes-isms? What's the origin of doot-doot-doot? And Mabes. I don't even know what you're talking about on that one. Now, he's saying Nabes, which is a form of knuckles.
It's like hello. Nabes.
Describe how you do it, though.
Well, it's kind of like a fist bump, but it's a Nabes bump.
Not with the top knuckle, but
no,
with the middle
with
knuckle.
The knuckles, yeah. And it's just Nabes. And doot, doot, doot is, which we've told this so many times when I first started talking about Michael Hayes and doot, doot, doot. And Hunter has a famous interview where he talks about when he got his hair cut and says, well, I don't want to be like Michael Hayes walking around with my hair down to my ass, doot, doot, doot. That's just simply not something Michael has ever said. However, if Michael were to make a sound when he walked, it would be doot, doot, doot. And I credit Brian Gewirtz for that one as well. So it's when we first started doing that, Michael called me and says, I see Michael Hayes, and I answer the phone. Hey, he goes, hey, I just want you to know something. I said, yeah. He goes, I ain't never said doot, doot, doot in my life. I said, I know, Michael, but you know that if you were to make a sound, that's what it would be. It would be doot, doot, doot. He goes, all right, then. End of conversation. I'm like, yeah, nobody said, Michael's never said it. Now he does all the time, by the way.
Yes, all the time.
Yeah. Now he doot, doot, doots.
And he has his own custom fanny pack now. Tell everybody about that.
Ah, he's got the greatest fanny pack in the world, man. It's got Freebird. It's got the fabulous Freebirds Hall of Fame and two different patches on it. And it's got a super wide band that goes around his super wideness. And it's got Freebird Hall of Fame. Very nice. It is. I need to get one of those. I got to find out where they had that made.
Bacabella wants to know, better pitch man in wrestling, Hendricks or Don West?
I'll go with Michael, just because Don West isn't here.
I love you for that. The Bad Street USA album, did you ever get it?
No.
What about Michael's album, Off the Streets?
Fuck no. Not just no, but fuck no.
Road Habib wants to know, what are three things that Hayes did that really pissed Vince off?
God, I think, you know,
early on, obviously not showing up for shots and kind of fucking up the record deal. But I think Vince is highly entertained by him.
We got lots of questions about the Freebirds appearing at the beginning of the Highlander movie. Do you know anything about that?
It was something that was done in the AWA. So that was a big deal because Vern was going to overtake Vince. I'll have guys in major motion pictures. But no, I really don't. I just find it funny that that's the only part of the Highlander movie I've ever seen.
Tons of questions about what's in Michael Hayes' fanny pack.
Dude, you'll never know. Sometimes it used to rattle. I kept my mints in there, my Altoids.
I don't know why that's funny, but it is. Yeah. He does keep the world's most worn-out wallet in there, though. You remember the old Seinfeld episode
Yes.
where Costanza had way too much?
And Michael's back problem is from being in the fanny pack and weighing him down frontwards versus sitting on it and fucking up his back the other way.
Lots of questions about whether or not Michael has a low-key big hog. Do you want to comment?
I don't even know what that is.
Do you ever have any interesting stories about Michael in airports, one way or another?
No, but I will say this: my brother Tom got married, we got snowed out and rented a car, and Michael got us from wherever the hell we were in the Carolinas to Knoxville, Tennessee, in record time. Michael's one of the best wheelmen you'd ever want to know.
I disagree.
Oh, he's great.
He about killed me at a Ruby Tuesdays once.
But you're still here, right?
I'm still here.
Okay, that makes him a great wheel man.
That's what's funny is he turned to me and said, but did you die?
No, you didn't die, boy. I got you here.
You know,
just saying. Deep.
You don't have a good Michael Hayes airport story? Come on.
No.
We usually tell it on live shows, but fuck, we're done with them.
Oh, no. I'm not going to tell that one, no.
All right, well, come join us.
Can we promise that
we'll tell it on Monday night with
JR? A live one.
Will you tell it on Monday night with JR?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right. Well, listen, I had fun talking about Michael P.S. Hayes. We'll try to get some more questions in on Patreon over the weekend. We appreciate you guys hanging in here with us, and this is going to be a fun WrestleMania weekend, Bruce. So let's go ahead and have you sort of address the elephant in the room. Not only are you back with WWE, you're back in the mania of WrestleMania season. What's a day in the life of Bruce Pritchard like right now?
Well, so far I've had roughly, what did I calculate before? I've had 3.5 hours sleep since Tuesday.
You have meetings that start at 11:15 at night?
Yeah, and they go till 5 o'clock in the morning, and then...
The next meeting's at 10 a.m.
The next meeting's 10 a.m., so things like that. Lots of meetings, and man, it's WrestleMania time. You just kind of go. Sleep's the enemy anyway. Sleep when you're dead.
If you've got people who are listening... And they're like sort of on the fence about WrestleMania this weekend. What would your advice to them be?
Well, by God, I think it's going to, this one could be. I think when you look at it on paper and go, yeah, other ones were bigger, they were different. I think when this is all said and done, is going to be one of those holy fucks. I really do. I think this is going to be, after the fact, one of the greatest WrestleManias. And that's a little insight, folks. In that I think that this will be one of those crazy things that people will be talking about for a long time to come.
Well, we hope you guys are talking about this episode, and we'll see you next Friday right here at noon on Something to Wrestle With. Bruce Pritchard.
Shaka Khan.
A new dimension in tag team competition in professional wrestling today. Their spokesman is Mr. Michael Hayes.
That's right. Don't you ever forget Fabulous Freebirds. Ladies and gentlemen, you have seen all kind of great tag teams come through your area. And you have always seen two men compromise the tag team. But before your eyes, you do see three.
And you Gordon, mean all three of you?
That's right, all three of us. That means you never know. You can never plan your strategy down the T because there's three of us. It may be Buddy and I wrestling. It may be Terry and I. It may be Terry and Buddy. You never know. So you've always got to be on your toes because you understand we are the hot childs of the city. They do run wild and I do look pretty, baby.
You can get a close-up on that face, Gordon.
I wonder if you'd mind introducing these men.
One at a time. Behind me, my big brother, the main man, the stud, 270 pounds of romping, stomping, walking, talking, graveyard destruction. He is the true, the only, the original master of disaster. He is not a drugstore cowboy. He is not an urban cowboy. He is a space cowboy. And beside him, one of our partners and our main man, the man that came in when we needed a helping hand. He's 230 pounds of sizzling stuff, and baby, he don't stop till he gets enough. This is our partner, Buddy. And last but not least, where women would like to feast, me. 240 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal so doggone bad you think I'm unreal. And let me tell you something, I got pretty hair and Farrah Fawcett, more moves than John Travolta. I'm sexier than Marilyn Monroe ever thought she could be. And all this may sound pretty and it may sound sweet, but it goes from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet. And the main thing you got to keep in your mind is this, that we are the greatest, the newest, the youngest, and the latest. And we are coming down to Georgia. And when we come to your city, we will get down with our nitty gritty. We've broken attendance records everywhere. We draw more than Bob Seger's ever thought about. Hart, the Commodores, more people have seen us. We broke the New Orleans Superdome attendance record, baby. So I want to say this closing remark, Gordon Solie. Everybody out there, you do whatever you want to say and do whatever you feel you must. But when the result ends up, another one bites the dust.
The Fabulous Freebirds.
It's your boy, Michael P.S.A.'s. I heard y'all was doing a podcast about me, and that gave me a little idea. Bad street, baby. I'm packing my fanny pack, and I am wearing my ugliest suit today. I can't wait to hear what you boys say on the podcast about me. Whole damn show about Michael P.S.A.'s. I did all the slam jamming that you want me to. Singing, strutting with my shirt off like only I could do. Free bird rules like I used to. New day, I'm looking right at you. And everyone remembers when I talked to Steve.
It was at the time that I coined Austin 316.
Well, a fucking course, that's the only thing that I could mean.
I'll whip your ass.
Sorry, Steve. Hey, I got an ideal. Give me a podcast. Cause I'm a semi-charming guy. I got an ideal. The Michael P.S. Hay Show. Featuring it's Conrad Thompson. Get it, dude. I want some of that podcast money, baby. I got an ideal. Give me a podcast, Conrad. I want some of that cash that you've been spreading around to Bruce and Bischoff. But now Schiavone Show sucks.
Michael P.S. Haynes, you can go to hell, buddy.
I'm a semi-charming guy. I deserve my own show. Me and you, Conrad. Don't believe any of the embarrassing stories Bruce tells about me. Free birds for life. Buy a fanny pack.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.